What is fear? Fear is a word. It's one of those words. There's several words in the English language. What it represents and what it is and how much control it has over us, the word really should be longer. It deserves a bigger word. Now, there's two kinds, really, right? There's two kinds of fear. There's the physiological aspect of fear. There's the visceral part of fear. You know what I'm talking about, that feeling of fear. But then there's the more emotional, or not emotional, more mental part, the more intellectual part of fear in your mind. So I can fear something as a physiological response to danger, or I can fear something as a mental response to danger. Isn't that what it is? Fear at its most basic level is a response to some sort of threatening or dangerous situation. You can think of a lot of different situations in which we might feel fear, either one of those, mental or emotional. Is all fear bad? No, not all fear is bad. Certain instincts, I think, that God put within us, the fear of pain. Guess what, guys? What is pain? Isn't pain when something is wrong with your body? I don't want to feel pain. And really what that means is, I don't want stuff to go wrong with my body. I think that God put that there. There's a disease, I can't remember the name of it, it's a long name. It's really a condition, not a disease. You don't feel pain. Your pain sensor, either in your brain or into the end of your nerves, it doesn't respond as it should. So you don't feel pain. Well, what happens? You burn yourself. You don't get treatment because you don't even know. You might twist your ankle. And again, just keep walking on it. And eventually you'll start to realize that your walking's not very good. But you might cause some serious damage to your ankle because you can't feel that something's wrong with your body. So this idea of the fear of pain is, in a certain sense, good, because we want our bodies to continue to function, right? That's an instinct that God put within us. Fear for others. Isn't this a sign of love? When I fear for one that I love? Isn't that why I fear? Because I love them. If I didn't care about the person, I wouldn't fear for them. As Tracy, I think about her flying. It was a much more frightening instance this time because now I'm thinking about not only my wife, but I'm thinking about my son. Well, if I didn't care about them, I wouldn't fear for them. So this idea of fear for others is a good thing because it means that I love them. It's something that comes from a place of love. Fear in the sense of respect. Appreciation of the power of something or someone. Now, we got two different ones here, your boss and a bear. Guess what? It's good to fear a bear because that bear is going to eat you or maul you or whatever it is. So that idea of and we're talking really there about the physical part of fear, right? This physiological response to the danger of the bear. Well, that enables me then, hopefully, to get away. Probably not outrunning a bear, right? But we're going to come back to the bear thing because it's a really good analogy. But you think about it from a mental respect. Fear of your boss. I don't want my boss to fire me. I don't want to get a pay decrease. I don't want to get a demotion. All of these dangers, as it were, threatening things on the job, I have an appreciation for the boss that he has more power than I do. It's not like maybe I'm not sweating or sick at my stomach or I'm not in fear of my life because of my boss. But there's an appreciation that he has more authority than I or she. So there's that fear and that respect. Often acquired through experience, this good fear. I fear pain. Why? Because I felt pain. I mean, that's just acquired through personal experience. The experience of consequence. I fear for my wife traveling because I know through experience that sometimes bad things happen when people are traveling. These fears are acquired through life circumstance. And the hallmark of good fear, as we think about what separates good fear from bad fear, is that it's not driven or not controlled by this emotion and visceral response. Let's talk about the bear again. I respect that bear. But if I let my body just be in control, I want to run away, right? Or I want to fight. Those are the two responses, fight or flight. That fear leads me to respond to that danger. If I let that fear control me into attacking the bear, I'm probably not going to win. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not winning against a bear. So in that respect, that fear would lead me into more danger if I let it control me. Fear becomes a problem when it controls us. Bad fear. We all know what that fear feels like, don't we? The sweaty palms, the queasy stomach. It manifests itself in different ways. And if we're not careful, we can let these physiological responses rule our behavior. Romans 6:19. I am speaking in human terms because of your natural limitations. Fear is one of those natural limitations. For just as you once presented your members as slaves to impurity and lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves to righteousness, leading to sanctification. Fear can control our behavior. Fear becomes a problem when it becomes controlling, and it can control us in two ways. One, it can keep us from doing what's right. Fear can prevent us from doing what God wants. 2 Corinthians 7:5, even when we had come into Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were afflicted at every turn, fighting without and fear within. In context, Paul is discussing his evangelistic efforts in Macedonia. He's going to go into Macedonia and preach and teach to these people. And what did he have to be afraid of? Perhaps the Jewish leaders, as they were going to come in every town he goes into, and they really harassed him a lot in his missionary journeys, didn't they? They drove him from town to town. They tried to put him in prison. They tried to put him to death. Maybe the Roman authorities he might have to be afraid of. People he was trying to reach. As we think in several different cases where the people he was reaching out to, the people he was evangelizing to, rioted against him. Caused him all sorts of distress and danger. Not just danger that he might be thrown in jail, but in many cases, danger for his actual physical life. He had a lot to fear. And he could have let that control him to prevent him from reaching out to those people with the gospel. What did he say there? Let's put that back up there. We came into Macedonia intending to teach, right? We were afflicted at every turn, fighting without and fear within. That fear could have said, well, I don't want to teach these people. I'm going back home. Man, this is too dangerous. I'm getting out of here. Of course, what would have been the ultimate consequence of that? Those people would not have been reached with the gospel. So fear can lead us to not do what needs to be done. Fear can also lead us into doing what is wrong. Now, there's two different ideas here. It's a subtle difference. Fear can control us in such a way simply that we don't do what's right, the absence of the positive. But fear can also lead us into actually participating in the wrong things, the presence of the negative. Those are not the same thing. 1 Peter 4:3-4, for the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, abominable idolatries. In all this they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. Now, but what would be the fear in this passage? Wouldn't it be the fear of being maligned? The fear of being excluded? The fear of being mistreated by these Gentiles who are surprised that we do not run with them? What are you doing? Why are you not doing what we do? And that fear would lead us into doing those things that we are not supposed to be doing anymore. So fear caused by uncertainty can lead us to make the wrong choices. Fear of being maligned can lead us into participating in things we shouldn't. And this is just an overall principle, right? Fear can control us in that it prevents us from doing what is right, and it leads us into doing what's wrong. And at the core of it, there's a difference between fear as a feeling and fear as an attitude. I'm really trying to stress this. There's the emotional, physiological part of fear, and then there's the mental, intellectual part of fear. And there's a difference between fear as a feeling and fear as a way of life, an attitude. It is okay to feel fear. Let me just put that out there. It's really hard to control if I'm standing in front of a bear or any other dangerous animal, whatever you want it to be. It's hard to control that physiological response, isn't it? My adrenaline's going to start pumping. I'm going to start getting the sweaty palms. My stomach might turn a little queasy. I might feel all of the physiological parts of fear. And in some senses, I don't really have control over that. That just happens, right? But it's not okay to let that fear control me. There's a difference between the two things. To feel fear and to let fear dictate what we do. How do we overcome fear? And really the point is, how do we feel fear without letting it control our actions, without letting it overwhelm our reason, overwhelm our intellect, overwhelm our will? How do we do that? 2 Corinthians 7:5-7, this is Paul continuing, talking about his evangelistic efforts into Macedonia. How did he overcome it? He felt the fear of all these threats that were around him. For even when we came into Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were afflicted every turn, fighting without and fear within. But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. Not only by his coming, but also the comfort with which he was comforted by you, as he told us of your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced still more. What two things got Paul through this fear? One was Titus, the other was the Corinthian church. The comfort that comes through God's people. Do we ever turn to other Christians to help us overcome our fear? You see this all the time, even in the animal kingdom. You see it on the savannas, you've got the lions prowling around. What are either the antelope or the elephants or whatever, what do? They gather together and they form a circle. You see videos of it. You should look it up sometime. It's pretty interesting. They form a circle around the young and they're all facing outward and they're all standing together. And the predators, they don't want to face like 8 elephants. Who wants to face 8 elephants? Nobody. So they stand together and that allows them to overcome this dangerous situation. It's hard to overcome fear if I'm doing it on my own. It's hard. If I just have to face everything in my life by myself, alone, I'm going to have 100 times the difficulty of overcoming my fear as those who stand together. How often do we turn to other Christians to help us overcome our fear? We talk about confession. It's not just about confessing our sins, confessing the things that we've done wrong, but confessing the things that are threatening to overcome me before they overcome me, so that I can have help in dealing with those things. The other side of this, do we look for ways to help other Christians overcome their fear? It's not just about waiting for somebody to come to you and say, I have this fear, help me, but being actively on the lookout for ways that we can help people. Of course, the beauty of this is, we've got this group here, not all of us fear the same things. Because of that, we can all overcome everything together. Fear can be overcome through each other. Romans 13, 3-4. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. What is this saying? The point here of this passage. If we're doing right, there's no need to fear. And we're talking about fear in that sense of respect for those who have authority, right? Those appreciation for those who have more power than you do. Could be any number of circumstances. But there's a greater principle. Are we living in such a way that we can avoid fearful situations? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we just have to avoid fear all the time. But guess what? If I'm afraid of being eaten by a bear, a good thing might be, don't go where there's a bunch of bears. I mean, that just makes sense, right? If I'm afraid of being disciplined at work, if I'm afraid of a demotion, you know what one solution might be? Work hard. Be a diligent worker. Conduct yourself in such a way that he would have no means to punish you, no means to discipline you, no reason to go after you. Just makes sense. Psalm 27, we're going to read 2 verses, verse 1 and verse 13. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. David had a lot of things to be afraid of. Now, if you think about David's life, first of all, he had that situation with Goliath, right? He really had every right to be afraid of Goliath. Like everyone around him was afraid of Goliath, right? He goes into the camp and what does he see? All the Israelites, they're terrified of the Philistines. Man, and what does he say? This is ridiculous. What are you guys doing? He goes and fights Goliath and wins. Then later, as he's being chased by Saul all over the country, again, all sorts of reasons to be afraid. He's afraid that the king's going to come and kill him. He's afraid that his friends are going to get hurt. I don't know, any number of scenarios there. But what does he say? The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Well, yeah, Goliath is a big dude. He's a mighty warrior. But he's not really anything compared to God. I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Yeah, sure, Saul's after me. Saul's coming after me, but I believe that God will make things better. That's what kept him going. His faith in the Lord, his belief that the Lord would help him, and his hope in something better. That's what allowed him to overcome this fear. And again, not all fear is bad. Matthew 10, 28 through 31. Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father, but even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Now, there's two kind of contradictory commands in this. Fear him who can. Fear as respect for one more powerful than you. Guess what, guys? God's more powerful than you. By a large margin. I mean, there's not really numbers you can put on it. God has more authority and power than you. And so in the same way that you fear your boss, this idea of respect, you should have that fear for our Creator. But also, fear is an emotion. Not just fear as the mental, the intellectual part. But in respect to God, there should be some visceral, physiological fear when considering the consequences of sin. That should be a fearful thing. That should be something that's frightening. Again, what does he say? Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. There's a fearful thing there. And as we've already looked at, how do I avoid that fear as an emotion in relation to God? Do the right stuff and you won't have to be afraid. This fear should be both rational and visceral. But then he goes on to say, do not fear, therefore. And you read this passage. Do not fear those, rather fear. And then do not fear at the end, fear not. If we fear the most powerful thing in the universe, that being God, what's left? If I know that I'm on his side, if I know that he counts me as valuable, and isn't that what he says? If that same being, that being God, the most powerful thing in the universe, if that being counts me as powerful, or valuable rather, if that being counts me as valuable, if he cares about me, even so far as to numbering the hairs on my head, that's how much God cares about us, that he cares about the intimate details of our lives. And if that's the case, who cares about my boss or the bear or any other sort of danger? God has my back. This idea of fear, again, it's hard to control the visceral response. And as I'm thinking about overcoming fear, as I was putting this lesson together, there's two kind of things here. There's the fear as a emotional, physical response to danger, and there's the fear in that we fear things mentally and intellectually. And quite frankly, you can overcome both. To overcome that emotional response, there's people that have done that, right? There's people that have trained and have worked and practiced and become good so that they don't have that immediate visceral physical response to fear. But it's going to take some practice. It's going to take some effort. It's going to take some dedication. And really what it comes down to ultimately is the more you think about God, the more time you spend dwelling on godly things, the more time you spend thinking about eternity, either heaven or hell, the less fearful everything else seems. I mean, really, when you think about heaven and all the greatness that comes in heaven and all the wonderful things that come through a relationship with God, the more you dwell on that, the less the physiological, physical response of fear, the less it's going to control your life. Because in each situation, as I think about, as I'm approaching whatever situation may arise in my life, I've got that in the back of my head. Whatever happens here, I'm spending an eternity with God. Whatever happens here, I know God's got my back. Whatever happens in this situation, God is on my side. That's how we overcome fear. Do you fear God and have the peace that comes through faith? In some ways, it seems oxymoronic. It seems paradoxical that I might fear a being and through that fear have peace. But it's a question that each of us need to answer. Fear is not inherently bad. Some fear is good. My question is, do you have the right kind of fear? And does that fear motivate you then to be right with God? If you're not right with God, I'm going to put this scripture up there one more time. If you're not right with God, read Matthew 10, 28 through 31 again. Read it and consider the consequences. And if you are right with God, read it and consider the blessings.